KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in El Cerrito.
I live in Sassoon City, California.
Montclair District of Oaktown.
I live in El Sobrante.
We live in Oakland.
Coming up, a battle over elk and cows in Point Reyes National Seashore comes to a head this summer.
Our current elk plan does not address the presence of elk on ranches. So it doesn't give us a whole lot of guidance on what we should do.
And we dig into the best places to eat in East Oakland.
It felt like I was eating at somebody's house. And the first time I had homemade pozole, I was losing my composure into this bowl.
Stay tuned, Cross Currents is coming up. You know that old advertising slogan, "Happy cows come from California"? It may have been talking about the cows in the Point Reyes National Seashore. If you take a day trip there this summer, you'll see them grazing the hillsides that overlook the ocean. And if you look closely, you may also be able to spot or hear one of the park's 700 or so tule elk. Point Reyes is one of the few national parks in the country that's zoned for both agriculture and wilderness. But this uniqueness has also caused a lot of tension between people who think farms don't have a place in a national park and others who think the elk are out of place. KALW's environment reporter Angela Johnston has more.
If you want to get a history of ranching in Point Reyes, you could do a lot worse than talking to this guy.
Oh, I'm Robert McClure. I am a fourth-generation dairy farmer. I tell people my standard line is I'm the fourth generation of people not smart enough to do something else.
The reality is his family has mastered how to raise and milk cows here. They've been dairying in Point Reyes for 130 years, before it was a national park.
Follow me, Angela. We will turn you into a cowgirl. Opie, come here. You're not a cow dog. Trust me.
McClure and his dog Opie show me a restored barn out back.
They used to milk the cows in here, I believe by hand, long before my time.
Back then, milk, cream, and butter were shipped to San Francisco by schooner. Now, McClure milks 500 cows, and the milk ends up in grocery stores under the Clover brand. It's one of six remaining dairies in Point Reyes. They're all organic, and they've also all been here way before the National Seashore was officially established in 1962. In the summer, the hills are brown and bad for grazing, so McClure's barn is filled with giant heaps of corn, almond hulls, and soybean meal, ready to be mixed for feed.
So that's our big margarita mixer truck. It's got big blades like a blender.
Yeah.
We put all of our feedstuffs in there, and that's where we feed the cows.
McClure says he's invested in equipment like this and has done pricey repairs, even though his family no longer owns the land. When Point Reyes National Seashore was established, some dairy ranchers sold their land to the national park in exchange for leases.
It was our belief that, you know, we would be here for at least as long as we're getting along. And we made significant investments in the dairy industry, especially dairy business, huge capital investments. I mean, we got to put literally millions of dollars into these places.
But now he's not sure how much longer he can stay. The National Park Service will soon decide whether to renew the leases for the six dairies and 18 beef ranches in Point Reyes National Seashore. Some environmental groups sued the Park Service to get an environmental impact statement, looking at how these farms affect nature. Now the park has to consider a handful of options, ones that keep leasing to ranchers like the McClures and their cows, and ones that could kick them out and protect other species, like tule elk. Dave Press is a wildlife ecologist for the park. We're walking through the fields of an abandoned ranch on the western edge of the peninsula.
So this is just a natural area now, and it's where the Drake's Beach tule elk herd spends quite a bit of time. So my expectation is that we'll find the elk out this way.
You can only find tule elk in California, back in the 1800s, they grazed the Point Reyes Peninsula just like the cattle do now, but they were hunted out and most people thought they were extinct. But a small herd was found in Southern California, and many years later, tule elk were reintroduced back into Point Reyes. Now, if you take a hike in certain areas of the park, you'll likely see their antlers peeking out of the tall grass and fog.
Yeah, so there's a few animals over here. If you can see...
Press passes me his binoculars.
There's a couple crossing that fence, and right in between those two adult cows, you can see a little calf there.
An elk and her baby calf are stepping through a barbed wire fence dividing wilderness from farmland. In theory, the elk are supposed to stay in the wilderness, but...
They're going to go no matter what. They're going to do what they want to do.
The elk are wild animals. It doesn't matter if a fence gets in the way. They'll go over and under and through it enough, and eventually they'll knock it down. Farmers hate this, but the environmentalists who sued the park don't think elk should be confined. They point to 250 tule elk that died during the last drought.
So that really set us on a path to looking at how the park was being managed.
Deborah Moskowitz heads the Resource Renewal Institute. They're one of the environmental groups that sued the Park Service.
And what we found was that it seemed like there was kind of a priority given to making sure that everything worked well for the ranches.
While the elk and other species get the short shrift.
It's like, well, what is the purpose of a national park? Is it to prioritize taking care of wildlife? After all, where are they going to go?
When they looked into it further, they discovered the park's general management plan hadn't been updated in decades.
So, you know, a lot's happened in the last 38 years. Climate change, we know a lot about more about that.
Moskowitz worries about the lack of water for elk and cattle overgrazing.
And also, another fact is that cattle are responsible for most of the greenhouse gases from the park.
And she says they produce more than 100 million pounds of manure each year.
I think sometimes people will say, well, it's your job as the National Park Service to take care of natural resources, which is true, and it is our job.
Melanie Gunn is a spokesperson for Point Reyes National Seashore.
And it's our job to take care of the cultural resources. So it's a great mission. It's challenging and complicated.
So as part of the lawsuit, the park agreed to update their plan and study six different scenarios, including what it would be like if ranching was cut back or totally out of the picture. But to be fair to the farmers, the cultural resource, they also agreed to study what it would be like if elk were gone. Because while the environmentalists see the elk as treasures that need protection, many ranchers see them as nuisances that damage their fences, like what ecologist Dave Press and I observed through his binoculars.
And then there's also concerns about competition for forage.
So once elk break into pasture, farmers claim they'll outmunch their cattle. Then ranchers say they'll have to start buying feed so their animals don't go hungry.
Our current elk plan, which was written in 1998, does not address the presence of elk on ranches. So it doesn't give us a whole lot of guidance on what we should do.
They've tried to manage the elk in small ways, like hazing them off ranches daily and hoping over time they'll learn to stay away.
But we need to consider the big picture. And the reality is that seeing tule elk along the Drake's Beach area it's a major attraction for folks that come out to the park.
And West Marin is a small community. Neighbors have stakes on both sides of the lawsuit. But beef rancher Bill Nyman's outspoken.
It's politically incorrect to say that the elk shouldn't be here.
Nyman's family hasn't been ranching in the park for as long as others, like the McClures, but he's been extremely successful. He started Nyman Ranch here, now a multi-million-dollar company, and he's now working with the meal kit company Blue Apron. He's confident about the way he manages his cattle.
Come, cattle!
He says he's trained them like this so it's easier to move them around his land to make sure it isn't overgrazed. So he doesn't buy the argument about cows damaging the landscape. Nyman tells me he treats the land just as well as he treats his cattle, and consumers like it. but he thinks unmanaged elk would put all of that at risk.
Will this ranch operation be able to survive or thrive and produce food for human consumption with in harmony with the elk? I don't think so.
Since their reintroduction into the park, the elk have multiplied. They have no natural predators here.
Unless you're going to introduce grizzly bears and wolves to prey on the elk and keep that herd in balance, or you're going to have Dick Cheney out here hunting with a high-powered rifle to reduce the number of elk. If we're not going to take those steps, the elk really should not be here.
Most of the park's future options involve closely managing the herd, constantly keeping the numbers down. But Nyman doesn't think that's enough.
It's not a zoo. It's not a petting zoo. And that's not what we should be trying to create out here.
Other ranchers, like Robert McClure, think it doesn't have to be either or. As long as they don't get onto ranches, he thinks they can share the park with the elk and hope the park will land somewhere in between, a sort of managed coexistence.
It has worked well for almost 50 years, and I've been involved in it for almost since the inception of the park. I've been here, and I remember even when the park bought the ranches, and we were a little bit apprehensive at first. Is this going to work out? But it really has. I mean, we can work together. In my opinion, it can be a model for, you know, environmental concerns, sustainability, all that kind of stuff, and modern, viable agriculture. We can do it. We have been doing it.
McClure starts up an ATV and drives me to a big barn that can house cows in the rainy wintertime, so their manure doesn't flow into streams.
All of the manure is contained within here. You can see this little scraper thing that goes back and forth.
Yeah.
This was the first one in California installed as a scraper system. This just goes automatically, sweeps the floor. It just continually runs.
He says he wants to invest in more tech like this to keep the ranch as sustainable as possible. But with an unclear future, he can't afford that right now. McClure says a future with environmentally friendly farms is not only possible, it's necessary.
Because we have to. We have to be, you know, we all need to eat. We do. Whether your food choices may be different than mine, but we still have to eat. And we can, you know, your food doesn't come from the store. It comes from a farmer. And once we're gone, we're gone. We're not coming back.
The National Park Service is expected to come out with their environmental impact statement shortly. In it, they'll present their preferred alternative for the future of elk and ranch lands on the seashore. The public will then have 45 days to make comments. In Point Reyes, I'm Angela Johnston for Cross Currents.
Angela is KELW's environment reporter. You can reach her at environment@kelw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Oakland's food scene has been blowing up in the past few years, with an increase in the numbers of new restaurants throughout the town. And if you ask about the best locations to eat, you'll probably hear Lake Merritt, Jack London Square, or downtown. Rarely do people say East Oakland. Of the San Francisco Chronicle's best Bay Area restaurants of 2018, only one was in the East Side. So when listener Diane Rodriguez asked,
"What are good places to eat in East Oakland?"
we decided to ask around. Reporter Salim Shakir Gilmore started his culinary investigation at the Fruitvale Public Market near the Fruitvale BART station.
The Fruitvale BART station is bustling with restaurants, street vendors, and people. It reflects the local Latinx residents with artwork and vendors that cater to the community, and a buzz of development as Oakland continues to expand. Today, people are moving in and out of restaurants, heading to and from the BART station, Some are preparing for their lunch break. What better time and place to ask about the best places to eat in East Oakland?
What counts as East Oakland?
This Lucky 37 is up on Fruitvale. Okay. They got some bomb wings over there. Be smacking.
Any taco truck in East Oakland.
Any taco truck?
Yeah.
If it's 1 o'clock and you're looking for that good taco, what's the taco truck that you know will be open and hot and fresh?
Migruyense taco truck. It's in front of Goodwill on 29.
What's a good spot deep east?
I go to little liquor stores on the corner. Been going there and get chicken and waffles early morning. $5.
The diversity, culture is big over here.
Oh, Sequoia Diner.
Yes.
You gotta get there early.
You can just find a lot of different people from all over the world. It's a beautiful place out here, man.
I got some interest in Leeds, but I'm from East Oakland. And if you ask me, my favorite place to eat around here is Two Mamas Vegan Kitchen, a local breakfast and lunch spot on East 12th and 37th Ave.
So we're gonna take a walk. It's about two blocks to Two Mamas.
My favorite dish is the Belgian waffle. But today, I'm having the vegan sausage Benedict with kale and a side of potato salad. And of course, a cup of coffee. Two Mamas is welcoming, bright, and rustic. There are hard wooden tables and crayon drawings on the wall right next to the children's play area. When I first came to Two Mamas, I met the original owners, Jess and Jules, a lesbian couple that opened the restaurant in 2014. The food has stayed consistently good, so I was surprised to learn that its ownership changed a few years ago. Billy Page used to work with Jess and Jules, so when the couple decided to sell, Billy became the first popper of Two Mamas.
So what am I doing? I'm shaking up a can of coconut milk. And that's the base for my vegan hollandaise sauce, because I'm not going to use any egg or butter.
Two Mamas only uses fresh, local ingredients that are mostly organic and, of course, vegan.
I'm a vegan. I've been a vegan for 14 years.
Initially, Billy did it for health reasons, so he switched to a plant-based diet, eating local organic foods. I was vegan myself for 12 years. I remember when it was hard to find a vegan dish, let alone a whole restaurant. So I asked him, who are your customers?
The customer base is diverse.
Both geographically and racially.
A lot of people of color are coming in just to try it.
A 2016 report found that just 3% of African Americans in the U.S. are vegan or vegetarian. But today in East Oakland, I meet plenty of black people and people of color who are dabbling in a plant-based diet, like 27-year-old Avia, who gets her Two Mamas fix at least once a week.
Take BART, I will drive, I will walk, fly, I'll do what I need to. And of course, it's black-owned, and I'm rooting for everybody black.
I'm rooting for everybody black, too, and local. While Two Mamas is newer to the area, some restaurants go back years, like La Casita, a little Mexican restaurant that's been here since 2004. This place breathes Oakland.
So I'm looking at a mural of Let's Go Oakland, Viva el Pueblo. You know, it's the A's on the wall.
That's Christina Mitchell, a local foodie and blogger at eastbaydish.com. She got her start in 2009.
And at that time, San Francisco was the focus. Oakland was completely an afterthought. And so I wanted to write about our food for us and by us.
Christina first discovered La Casita under its previous owner.
It felt like I was eating in somebody's house. And the first time I had like homemade pozole, I was losing my composure into this bowl. Everyone around me was laughing because I'm just like exclaiming and murmuring like, oh my goodness. But really just getting into this bowl of comfort.
Okay. Y pozole?
Si.
She's been coming back as a regular ever since. Usually on Sundays like this, before the church crowd forms a line down the sidewalk. Today, Christina is ordering her usual steaming bowl of pozole. Except now, we're here under fresh ownership, the former owner's nephew, Norberto Martinez Jr. Christina says that La Casita kept its homemade family recipes, including hominy, that's still made from scratch.
Here we go. Thank you.
Lobos a la americana, no onion.
But Noberto also breathed new life into the atmosphere for a fresh, modern feel. Here he is featured on Christina's blog.
I'm trying to keep that tradition alive here in Oakland and very proud to do it here in my neighborhood.
So it's kind of like the new generation coming into the old traditional recipes.
While maintaining that same homemade family feel. Transitioning to the new while preserving the past is becoming a theme. Not just for food, but for the overall population. Christina lives in East Oakland's Laurel District.
The businesses are changing very quickly. Like, on that little stretch of MacArthur, it used to be a taqueria, Gerardo's taqueria, a barbershop. Now there's an apothecary store and the Sequoia Diner.
Sequoia Diner is a quaint breakfast spot with a clean retro feel. It's located on MacArthur Boulevard, replacing Full House Cafe, which was an East Oakland treasure.
It just genuinely had soul. You could still like see like little remnants of what was there, you know, in the 1930s.
That's Sequoia Venari, who opened Sequoia Diner with her husband in 2015. She says they initially didn't have the warmest reception in East Oakland.
We went through a little bit of a hazing because the previous restaurant was so well loved.
So Sequoia says they had to go above and beyond to make sure that people got to know them.
Because we're about to show you what our biscuits are about. We got like coffee, tea, like come and get to know us because we're like, we love you. And if you don't, that's okay too. Like we get it.
Eventually, Sequoia's rotating menu, the homemade jams, and that home-cured bacon won the community over.
Happy Sunday, you guys. So today we have a couple of specials. We have our fried chicken and waffle.
They even added a revamped hash in tribute to a Full House Cafe bestseller. But today, I'm having the halibut benedict on a fresh biscuit baked this morning.
Our biscuit's like your grandma biscuit.
And it is good.
Oh, the dill smells amazing. Wow. Wow.
This morning, the place is packed full of regulars like Theo Calvin, who gets the specials here every weekend.
You know, I'm a local, born and raised right here. And to have something like Sequoia right here in the Laurel District is something long time coming.
But Theo says Sequoia still has that local feel.
It doesn't feel gentrified like a lot of the other places do. I can still come here and be comfortable in my own element. So that above and beyond is the most important thing to me.
Food is very personal. It invokes memories, represents history, and it brings people together. East Oakland's restaurants are one of the threads that weave the tight-knit community that is East Oakland. Not only do they serve up great food, but a lot of Oakland soul. In East Oakland, I'm Salim Shakir Gilmore for Cross Currents.
That story was a collaboration between Oakland Voices and KELW as part of our project, Hey Area and Sights and Sounds of East Oakland. You can hear more from both of those projects if you subscribe to the Cross Currents podcast. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. Tune into Cross Currents Monday at 5. We'll learn the meaning behind some prison slang.
Now it's like when they say, you working with feelings? I'm like, yes, yes I am. I'm working with feelings. I always work with feelings and you hurt them.
The latest from Uncuffed, stories from Solano State Prison, Monday at 5 on Cross Currents. Music is by Arjun Verma from San Francisco. He's performing at Old First Concerts tomorrow night.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Taylor Caldwell, Janae Darden, Audrey Dilling, Ariella Markowitz, Kristen McCandless, True Quinn, Marissa Ortega Welch, M. Lockswingen, and Eli Wertschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.